The consent agenda.
Mayor, I would like to take 4C, 1, and 2 for discussion under 7D.
Is that a motion? Yeah, it's a motion.
Yes.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to pull items 4C, 1, and 2 from the consent agenda for discussion and add them as a business item under 7D. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Anything further?
If nothing else, I move we approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda as amended. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Thank you. Item 5A is the CUNA City Police Fiscal Year 2019 Budget and Annual Police Report Presentation. Chief John McDaniel. And as far as the budget portion of this, this can be just informational, although it is at the pleasure of the council if you want to take any action on this tonight, as it is listed as one. But thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. This is probably going to be about 10 or 15 minutes, so feel free to stop me if you have any questions rather than having to wait to the end.
Did you bring snacks?
I'll try to make this fairly quick. I also brought Chris Saunders with me, so he is our planning and research director, and I will be going over some crime data and some other facts, and so he some of them get quite specific, and if there's any questions that I cannot answer, he is here to help out with any of those type of questions. If you don't mind moving to page 113 of tonight's packet, in our 2017 police report, basically in summary, I believe your investment last year, significant investment that you gave us last year, has made an absolutely positive difference in our response to crimes in CUNA, and my officers and I sincerely appreciate your support last year. Looking at the three major crime categories, these are the categories we have to on the right side there in the upper blue. These society, persons crimes, and also society crimes, these are the three major ones that we have to report to the state, which in turn reports to the FBI. There are several different data points, and that's required that we enter for each report that we take and investigate. And, overall, the crime rate is slightly down. You'll see that property and society crimes are up a little bit. I was happy to see, even though our, city limits have been expanding, I was happy to see that our Code 3 emergency response times are still within that absolutely acceptable level and just barely slightly up. You will notice on this sheet, towards the bottom, where it says police activity, that our school checks are significantly down. We've absolutely made these a priority, and I believe there are two major factors why the data does look like it does, and that is one of the reasons is we did change the definition in past years. In 2014 and 15, a school check, we made no difference between one at nighttime when there's nobody at the school versus what we define now as a school check, which is actually making contact with another human. So almost a community policing type of effort is how we define that now. The other major variable that's changed is that we do have a newer CAD system as of last year and this year, and that CAD system is more of a GPS-based system versus a address-based. And so we are still working with a vendor at this time to make some changes to where the deputies, right now, for example, if they check out at Hubbard Elementary and they contact with, say, school aide or the principal or some kids, if they don't type it in the exact right way, if they type in Hubbard Elementary with all the way fully written out, if it's in their ELEM instead of elementary, then they're not going to get credit for that. And that happens to be the case for all 11 of our schools. So we are working through that issue with the vendor, and so that's one of the reasons that's significantly down. But otherwise, everything looks really good. Our mental health cases are holding steady at 45 for the year, and overall number of arrests slightly up, but they were at 335 for this year. The next chart details our code enforcement type of calls. And so what we had planning and research look at was the overall county. So right now we are receiving some help from the two full-time code enforcement officers that work for the sheriff's office and all the unincorporated parts of the county. And so if you look at the ones that were taken inside Tuna City limits, and there were 918 total that were related to code enforcement type of calls. And the two Ada County code enforcement officers ended up taking 288 of those. So our CUNA police patrol teams took the other 630 of those calls that were related to code enforcement. And so between basically CUNA police patrol and then the two Ada County code enforcement officers, were handling close to the same amount of calls as the full-time code enforcement officer you see there. Sean Thomas is Eagle's full-time code enforcement officer, and I think they're within 30 or 40 calls in total. And I only say that to say that, you know, I anticipate potentially in the next, you know, couple, 3 years that we may have to go down that road. The good news is that they are significantly cheaper than a patrol officer because they don't have to be commissioned and don't require the ongoing and significant training costs at the beginning. And the last chart, Chris, if you don't mind, turn to the last chart, which shows, so this looks at calls for service and response times in both north and south of the tracks. So it looks at it, the different colored radiuses are 1.5 and 2 mile radiuses. And if you focus on that graph on the bottom right portion of the actual data fields, you will see, for example, in the 1 mile band north of the tracks, there were 718 calls that were priority twos and threes. So either in progress, just occurred, or a code three call, which is an absolute emergency. And our average response time was 6 minutes and 1 second. And south of the tracks, there were 97, but our response time was actually, you know, about 25 seconds, 26 seconds quicker south of the tracks. And that's for the 1 mile band. When you get, you know, into the 1.5 and 2 mile bands, you'll see that does go up more significantly at the 2 mile band. North of the tracks, it's at 7 minutes average response time, and south of the tracks is 11 minutes and 49 seconds, so a little over a 4 minute difference. But the good news is that, you know, we didn't see a major difference between those two. We're able to get down south at this point without too much of a delay. So, and Chris, if you don't mind going to page 112 at the four up. So I'll jump right into our budget, which outlines the increased costs, including in our full funding request. This request does include two detectives. One of the detectives is a person's crime detective, and the other one a juvenile detective. This person's crime detective we're asking for, it's common knowledge through our detective ranks and that our person's crime detective is the busiest out of all the detectives through the sheriff's office and the other contracts. Right now, person's crimes that occur after 5 o'clock in the evening are going to the on-call barrister detective, and that case is followed up through, they keep that case throughout the whole investigation and prosecution. And to give you an example of how much time is invested in many of these persons crimes cases, Jared Scott's our current persons crime detective. He just turned in a rape that occurred at a party and ended up being unfounded, but he had about 52 hours into that case before he was able to, you know, solidify that, you know, he had done a full investigation. And so those just take a long time. And so right now, currently, Barrister is supplementing our persons crimes workload at almost a full-time basis as it is. And so this includes the normal persons crimes as well as some of our specialty units like domestics, felony domestics, our internet crimes against children unit. We just made an arrest last week out here with one of those suspects, as well as our narcotics and gangs, et cetera, some of these specialty units. They also spend, Jared Scott spends a lot of his time also, and this does get farmed out to our school resource officers when they are in session, the 9 months that they're here, but there are a lot of health and welfare referrals that they go out on, and that there's, and sometimes we do have to declare kids. And so on to our second juvenile, our second request. It's a juvenile detective. Talking to, you know, supervisors out here and just the troops on the street, of course, the patrol teams would like to have a little bit more help. But they also realize that right now our numbers don't necessarily say it, that there's not a huge spike in, there's not even really a significant spike in juvenile crime. But there's definitely a perception of that. And what we're finding is that, you know, we do know that social media is creating excessive drama, you know, and I think in every school and every town in America. And we're finding that some of these kids that are troubled, that are at risk, are just requiring more and more time to get them the resources, to get the parents the resources and the buy-in, to get a plan together to where, you know, we can make a difference. We really feel teens are more aggressive with the cyberbullying and being more sexual in nature when they feel, you know, they can anonymously communicate, you know, electronically. So this position would not only be able to follow up on the most serious crimes in the schools, but would be able to be the conduit between the two patrol teams for our at-risk youth. So there were, we just had a lunch with the three school resource officers, and they all three said there's a significant increase from last year in just the amount of times they had it. Several issues going on at one time, sometimes, you know, multiple misdemeanors, potentially a felony, sex crime, and so I, talking to all the patrol and the supervisors, we really believe that a juvenile detective would be able to provide that year-round help and be able to get more into the prevention side of some of the crime that's going on. The last line in the first part of the budget is an increase of $4,818, and that's the cost of the part that this school district cannot afford to pay for the school resource officer that they are wanting to fund for Fremont Teed Middle School. That's going to be new this next year, as well as an initial point. So the middle school is, this year I think they're in the 870s. Next year they're going to have almost 100 more kids at just the middle school alone. And Detective Ducharme, she was extremely busy as it is trying to split both schools. So next year with the new middle school, the plan is to have a school resource officer, again, splitting initial point, which is going to go, I believe, 6th grade through 12th grade this year, and Teed. And so they were, through a Safe Schools grant, able to fund $67,000. The remainder of that balance for that school resource officer was that $4,818. And I just, you know, that's about 6.7% of the cost of that school resource officer. I know that's not our standard practice, but I will say, you know, having, being able to partner with the school, and I think, you know, it may just be a one-year basis. I think that's for a further discussion. But if you were to grant that money to pay that additional bit so they could be there for the whole 9 months, I think it would really help out, you know, patrol and our detective units as well, having somebody that can put out those fires before they become more serious crimes. And so this proposed $291,000 net increase to the contract also includes the 3% COLA that it appears the BOCC has tentatively approved for all the Ada County employees. And if this request was to be accepted, I'd like to mention that the roughly $100 plus a little bit of change, maybe around the 105, 106 mark per resident cost for police services would still be less than half the average in Ada County. And is still over 20% cheaper than Burley, which is around 14, 15,000, who also contracts with their sheriff's office. And so we really feel, I won't read like I did last year, all the different other units that are able to help us out in times of need, but it is an extensive list that somebody like a Burley would not get from the Cache County Sheriff's Office. So I stand for any questions.
Okay, and so I'll just add that Chief and I have had many discussions on this, and the additional funding for the school resource officer, I think that takes enough burden off of our city officers to be well worth it to help them out with that. I know that's not a norm for us to help pay for a school resource officer. However, I think it would increase our effectiveness as the city police also. So.
Absolutely. I think it would also help our response times and keep those low if we don't have to be in those schools. There were several times this year. Detective Ducharme at the middle school, for example, was into her own, investigating her own just occurred misdemeanors, a few times felonies, and there was something going on at initial point that patrol ended up having to, you know, get pretty deep into, which definitely can affect response times. And I want to say too, Mayor, you know, we something that I feel really fortunate to be part of is I get invited to about once every couple months, the superintendent of schools and the mayor and I and the police chief meet and just see if there's just any way we can serve our community better as all of us being public servants. And I really feel, you know, this year, Wendy Johnson and Kim, boy, they everywhere money is super tight, and they really had no more money to put at this than what the Safe Schools Grant gave them, which was $67,000. This is a fourth officer. I know next year there's with the new high school being built, that's going to be another need. And so whether this is a one-year request or not, I think that's something that'll be up for discussion. But it seems like we get a lot of bang for the buck in this regard, and I think we're fortunate that the school district is being partners like they have been in the past.
Okay. Questions for Chief?
Yes. Mayor?
Yes.
Chief, quick question. Are you looking to buy more vehicles for the added staff, or is this just replacement of the $143,000?
Yeah, so that 143, that's a great question. What are the everything from our, so vehicles includes fuel, maintenance. So we have a full maintenance shop with five employees. That's tires, fuel, insurance. That is the prorated yearly cost of the vehicle. So a fully outfitted Tahoe, and about half the cost is everything we throw in it. It's I think close to, it's over $50,000. And so we try to turn those out because we run them pretty hard, you know, going to code three calls and some other things. So we try to return those over at about 120,000 miles. And so that is a prorated amount. So when we factor in how many vehicles we have total, I think between our detectives, my vehicle, the sergeant, and then our five on-duty patrol men and women that share a vehicle. So does the sergeant shares a vehicle, the only ones that don't are just me and the two detectives. But so I think the combination of those vehicles divided by how all those costs, that's what it comes out to be per vehicle. And the detective vehicles are not near as much. So there's a cost for a pursuit-rated patrol vehicle versus a detective vehicle. And I can surely get you those breakdowns if you'd like.
That'd be great. That's what I was going to ask for.
You bet. Absolutely.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes.
John, what is support? 18,830. Off to the left, you have 538 in parentheses there. What does that stand for?
Yeah, so that is our, that's the, I believe, and Chris, you can step in if you, if I'm wrong here, I believe that's the total of our society persons and property crimes that we have to report. So when we broke down how many positions we had to have, so that is a, that's an FBI requirement to have a police department or sheriff's office. If you're going to be going out and investigating crime, you do have to report. And so these NIBRS numbers that then get given to the FBI, so it goes to the state first and then on to the feds. But the so that is a number that's directly related to how many of those total crimes, and so the amount of time it took to enter those, that's split evenly between between the three contracts, and it's charged per, so the cost of that unit is charged. Otherwise, we'd have to find a way to do that within house. And I originally thought that was some of our other services that we get, but there's not a direct charge for lots of the other services that we do get, from crime scene to crime lab to there's a lot of experts that we do call out that are whole different units that help, and there are not charges for those. $35 a crime, so.
So it's a flat fee.
Yeah.
Okay.
So essentially where that cost comes from is it takes us on average about 2 hours to enter every crime into the what's called the NIBRS system, which stands for National Incident-Based Reporting System. It's the FBI requirement that John mentioned earlier. And so what that is a shared cost that we charge all of our contract cities in order to for us to meet that requirement that the feds place upon us.
Okay. And if you would, while you're up there, just state your name so it's on the recording. So when
yes,
we
absolutely. Christopher Saunders, Planning and Research Manager with the Sheriff's Office.
Thank you very much.
Chris, before you leave, because I know John doesn't have the answer, do you know what we paid last year for the less shared credit? Or maybe I should ask John. Okay.
Yeah, so that is a flat 7%. And so we also, with our CAD issues that I talked about with like the school checks and really getting those numbers dialed in to where we can be 100% reliable on. So that shared services credit, we were trying to look at how often was a CUNA city officer leaving city limits. And our last tabulation was right around that 7%. And so the last 2 years, we have kept it at that flat rate, and that's for all three contracts. So last year, it would be 7% of what our contract was. And I believe on that sheet, it does have last year's contract amount with a net change. And so it would be that 7% times last year's contract rate, which was
1,914,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that it was 7% last year as well.
Okay.
And on the other, and on the other side of that, we do not, for the times that South County commissioned deputies come in and help us with our reports, if we're stacked on a couple domestics, or we just took somebody to jail and we had somebody on vacation, and we do not ask them, we don't take that away from that 7% that we are crediting you back. So it's only a one way.
So it's going to be a flat 7% every year.
That is
from here forward.
That is the plan for right now. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The last question: Is the 3% COLA locked in with the county commissioners?
They have.
Or is that a suggestion?
They have. This year, it seems to be a lot more solid. I think they put it in writing that's they've even given an email to all 1,700 county employees stating that is their intention, and that has not happened in past years. So I believe it's pretty solid from everything I'm hearing.
Okay. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Very good. Further questions? Forgotten.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate all you do. Next, we have the Ada County Prosecutor's Office funding request for fiscal year 2019. Tamara Kelly, welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the City Council. I'm Tamara Kelly, a Deputy Prosecutor for the Ada County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. On behalf of Jim Bennett, I'm here to ask the Council to renew our contract for prosecution services for the fiscal year 2019. The request from my office would be $55,000. $570. That's based upon just the number of misdemeanor and infraction cases that we've prosecuted for the city of CUNA in the previous completed fiscal year. I just take a percentage of the total amount of misdemeanor cases our office prosecutes. So currently that's for the city of CUNA, that's about 7.3%. Our request includes just the misdemeanor and infraction cases filed by our office. What it does not include, additional services that we would add, if any of those defendants on cases that we had filed and sought a judgment violated their probation, we would go through those probation violation hearings, or were found to be contempt of court. A common way to be in contempt of court is not paying court fees or restitution. We would handle those proceedings, and that time that we spend on that is not included in our request. Any time that we spend on a case that may be declined by our office, maybe we've met with crime victims, or we've met with detectives, or asked for additional investigation from law enforcement, that time that we spent is not included in our request. We also, in the magistrate division, have two full-time victim witness coordinators that work with crime victims. So any crime victim it would be a person's crime, typically not a theft crime, from the city of CUNA. Their time spent on a case, they typically are assigned, and they spend their work the lifetime with the case, even through probation violations and contempt. That's not included in our request. As well as, I know I've talked about it before, but any kind of domestic violence case, that an arrest that occurred in CUNA, we put into a fast-tracked court, so an Ada County Domestic Violence Court. Some of our cases in that court do come from the city of CUNA. They get kind of special attention. They're with a prosecutor that has a smaller caseload that works only on domestic violence. Those cases are handled faster than a typical criminal misdemeanor, just because of the research out there that while a criminal domestic violence case is pending, that's the most lethal time for a crime victim. And so that would be our request. I know that it's a bit more money than last year, but the number of, or the amount of misdemeanor cases actually decreased since last year. And that's mostly because the amount of overall misdemeanors for our unit decreased, and the cost for each attorney went up a little bit. Last year, the Ada County Prosecutor's Office, all the deputies did get a small cost of living increase. So it's kind of, we add that into our prosecution services contract a year delayed. Our starting salary did increase a little bit as well. And so the starting salary for a brand new shiny prosecutor is about $60,000.
They start out shiny?
Yeah. They don't end that way, though. So any questions that you have for me?
Okay. Questions for Tammy?
No, thank you.
We appreciate all you do. We think we get a really great service from you. So.
Great. Thank you very much.
Always good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Public hearings. So this is public hearing and consideration to approve 18-01-ZC rezone. Is there anyone here? This is on the Thistle Farm and Vanderkoy Farm LLC. Is there anyone here that wishes to testify that didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Troy, sir. So the applicant, Katie Miller with Bailey Engineers, on behalf of Thistle Farm and Vanderkoy Farm LLCs, request approval for a rezone of approximately 73.5 acres of four lots within Chisholm Valley Subdivision, number 1 and 2, from agriculture to an R6 medium density residential zone. I've got to flip pages. Following the comprehensive plan, the site is located at the northwest corner of Linder and Columbia, roads APN NOS R1393850100 and R6 R1693860010 and R1693860290 and R1693860280. Troy, are you going to present or? Okay.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. For the record, my name is Katie Miller with Bailey Engineering. Address is 4242 North Brookside Lane, Boise, Idaho, 83714. So the application before you tonight is a rezone and a rezone only. Originally, we came in with a rezone and preliminary plat. However, our preliminary plat is not in the state to submit, so we are asking for a rezone only this evening. So please keep that in mind as we talk. Go ahead to the next slide, if you don't mind. Whoa. All right. Here's a vicinity map. Our site is located on South Linder Road, north of Columbia, and south of Lake Hazel. The site consists of 73 acres. You can go ahead and switch to the next one if you don't mind. Here's the current zoning map. It's 73 acres, currently zoned agriculture. It was part of the 2006 LID program with the city when it was annexed in. We are asking for an R6 zoning designation this evening. Go ahead. Here's a copy of your comprehensive plan, which was adopted by City Council in 2008. As you can see, the west side of the property, 36 acres on the west side, is medium density residential, which can be anywhere from R4 to R8, for a total of 295 lots per acre at the R8 designation. The east portion, 36 acres, is zoned mixed use, which can be anywhere from 2 to 20 acres for that 36-acre parcel. Again, a total of 272 units per acre if compliant with the maximum in your comp plan. That's a total of 1,022 units for the comprehensive 73 acres. We're asking for an R6 designation tonight. I do want to point out one of the oppositions that you'll hear from the neighbors to the south of us tonight. You can see on our west parcel, most of the neighbors here are from Chisholm Valley, which are directly to the south of our west parcel. One of their needs and their feelings is that there's not enough low-density residential in the city of CUNA, and there's too much high-density residential. So I do definitely want to point out that everything to the west of them, including them potentially to the south of them, all that light yellow area is zoned in your comprehensive plan as low-density residential. You can go ahead and switch to the next slide. Here's your impact, complete impact plan, City of CUNA's comprehensive plan, and you can see there is low density everywhere. It just doesn't happen to be to the north of their subdivision. So what we're asking for tonight is definitely very conservative and in compliance with your comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan has been in action for 10 years, and you guys, go ahead and switch to the next one if you don't mind. If you look at the current zoning map on the left, you can see the brown areas, which are R6 designations. Those are subdivisions that have recently been rezoned and approved and are consistent with your comprehensive plan. The city has made substantial investments in infrastructure to support your comprehensive plan. We've got the CUNA North Water Waste Treatment Plant directly to the north of us. Directly to the east of us, the city has invested in a regional sewer lift station and an irrigation pump station, both which have been upsized to handle the development which we're proposing in front of you tonight. So you've got the high school going in directly to the east. You've got expansion for future schools directly to the south. The city's made a huge investment there. Again, the investment in the infrastructure. And it is a perfect site for a medium density residential neighborhood around the subdivision. So again, with that being said, I want to focus on what's before you tonight, and that is clearly a rezone from an agriculture to an R6 designation, very much conservative compared to what the comp plan would potentially allow for. Issues that will be brought up tonight, letters of opposition that you've seen in your packet, have been for safety reasons. irrigation and water disruption to the neighborhood to the south, things of that nature, all which go with the preliminary plat and planning purposes, of which we're not even asking about tonight. We're not presenting tonight. We're not in a position to. So please keep that in mind when you hear everything, and keep into consideration that we're asking for an R6 approval. And I would stand for any questions.
Okay, questions?
Not at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you guys very much.
All right, so this is a public hearing. I guess so one of these is a sign-up sheet for an ordinance amendment on final plats, and I see I have four people that signed up on that. I'm going to guess that that was a mistake. That's usually not a controversial type thing. So was there anybody that signed up to testify in the final plat subdivision ordinance? Was there anybody that meant to sign up for that? Okay, so I'm going to guess that was a mistake, and that everyone is wanting to testify in this case. So I'll treat it as such and name those names, and if I'm wrong, just let me know. So this is a public hearing. The way we generally treat those is public comment is 3 minutes. Public comment is 3 minutes, and then there's 10 minutes for a rebuttal. Yes, Wendy.
I was just going to remind you that Troy still needs to do a staff report, please.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I like to forget that for some reason. Staff report. Troy, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's probably a few people who don't want to hear me talk tonight. just want to stand up before you tonight and say good evening. Hopefully everyone's ready for tonight's hearing. The application before you tonight is just a rezone. It's 18-0-1 ZC. It is presented for your vote for a decision tonight, and just want to let you know that all of the noticing procedures have been met in order to hold tonight's meeting. That includes publishing the newspapers, the site was posted, letters were sent. in fact, we extended that noticing for landowner letters from 300 feet to 400 feet, given the nature of the project. So while some may want to talk about the pre-plat, we're just talking about the rezone tonight. The applicant is seeking approval for the rezone from agriculture to an R6 for 73.5 acres approximately that are already in the city limits. The four parcels that are involved in tonight's rezone application actually are lots within the Chisholm Valley subdivision number 1 and number 2. So it's always been contemplated that they would be part of a subdivision at some point. Katie Miller was correct. The east half of the project actually is comprehensive plan designated, not zoned, but designated as multi-use, which can support anywhere from 2 to 20 units per acre. And the west half is designated as medium density residential, which, as you are aware, can range anywhere from 4 units to 8 units per acre. The project is located near the northwest corner of Linder and Columbia Roads, and it does have significant frontage on Linder Road, which will be governed at the time of the pre-plat application as it moves forward. The lots that are involved with this rezone were in the Local Improvement District, also known as the LID. The obligations for that LID were satisfied in the amount set forth by the LID and City Council. So it was always anticipated that there would be at least some development on these properties. With future development and the pre-plat that comes forward, hopefully in the near future, the applicant, the developer, will be required to extend public services, that is sewer, pressurized irrigation and water. While this site does neighbor a county subdivision, it is already in the city limits of CUNA, and this request does follow the comprehensive plan. It does follow the comprehensive plan map. It follows the goals of the city, and staff would put forward a recommendation of approval. The staff has worked with the applicant diligently in order to get this application before you tonight, and I would stand for any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions for Troy.
I guess I just want to clarify, I don't know who this one should go to, but I know we're talking about rezoning to R6. Is there still the stipulation that's mentioned in the planning and zoning minutes and everything that it's actually like 4.25 is what they would intend to build?
That was the condition that planning and zoning actually forwarded, but yes, that would still.
That's still what's being asked for? Okay, thank you.
Yes. Good question. Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to point out that staff did receive a letter from a citizen yesterday afternoon, and during the public testimony, if you would just give me a few minutes to read that into the record, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, very good. All right, now we can get to opening up the public hearing. Under a motion to open.
Move we open the public hearing.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to open the public hearing in the matter of 18-01-ZC rezone. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. All right. So, again, we have people signed up here to testify. Your comments are timed at 3 minutes. So we'll go ahead and get started. Looks like Stephanie Kennis. Am I saying that wrong? Okay. You have to make sure the city clerk has one for the record.
Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you for allowing us this opportunity to chat with you. My name is Stephanie Kennedy, and I am a citizen and a neighbor of Chisholm Valley neighborhood. I live at the northeast corner of the subdivision, and it took me 7 years to find my property. I was very specific with what I wanted. I needed an unobstructed view. I wanted a wide open space. I wanted a safe and quiet area. Chisholm Valley offered all of these to me. With the proposed subdivision, I and all of my neighbors will lose all of these features that brought us out to this beautiful country area. I have my property has two fence lines, and I'll be impacted by this area on both sides of my property. I'll lose my view. Our subdivision will lose our wide open space, and with all of the new proposed homes, we'll lose our solitude and peacefulness, and they will most definitely be lost. But most of all, it's about our safety. It will be compromised. We, with the proposed area, we are going to be a thoroughfare, and so it will impact negatively our young children and our older population with mobility difficulties. And I don't believe it's possible to circumvent racing cars and have a very positive outcome. With the large amount of proposed homes, the congestion will definitely compromise the safety of our homes, as well as the emergency vehicles and their response times to emergencies in our already existing neighborhood. But lastly is the easement issue. I'm at the northeast corner, and the main water line was ruptured at the back corner of my property, and there was a huge backhoe that came in and an end loader. They had to take out the entire back corner of my property with both property lines, or both proposed property lines impacted by this. There was equipment that had to be brought in to repair the pipes. There was a huge mess, and there was no way that the small easement that they're asking for now could ever have compensated for the amount of equipment and mess that was there. So basically the whole back corner and both sides were impacted with all of the water. And so there were piles of dirt, there was water, and potentially this could happen again. And with the very close proposed property lines, it could potentially flood the homes and the yards in both of the neighborhoods, but especially mine. And so I would ask you to reconsider these proposed plans. The very reason that we moved out there is now potentially going to be compromised, and we'll lose the very reason. Thank you.
Okay. So, Stephanie, may I ask if there was some other type of development that were to happen there, what would your recommendation be for you?
I would propose a larger easement. When I talked with Tim, I suggested to him that there be a common area back there. The mess that was back there was probably 75 foot directly behind, and then probably 100 foot on each side. And there were piles of dirt and all of the water that washed out everything. So I would propose a much larger easement area. Our lines now go from Columbia down to the north, and so they go through the northeast and go across the back and then back up to Columbia. So it's a big U, and that's our irrigation line. It's a large pipe, and then the pump system. And so if we did, I proposed a park area back there, because where it makes those curves is where the issue is. When the water forces out, it blows out those corners. And I believe this is the second time that it's happened. First time I saw.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you very
much. Questions for Tiffany? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Virginia Jepson.
Hi, and thank you for your time. My name is Virginia Jepson, and I live at 7901 South Chisholm Way. I share many of the same concerns as my neighbors. We realize growth is coming, and we can't stop it. My goal is not to stop it, but to try to find a compromise that both sides will be happy with. I have significant concerns with an R4 to R6 subdivision being built adjacent to ours and tying into our current subdivision. Our subdivision does not have the infrastructure to support that increase in population. We do not have sidewalks. Therefore, when my children and I ride our bikes, we ride in the streets. We have a significant number of children and pets in our subdivision, and I'm concerned for their safety with the addition of this new subdivision and the population it will bring with it. When my husband and I moved out here, we were so excited for the chance to own a small piece of land. There are not a lot of opportunities in the valley to purchase and own small acreage properties. We have a very nice and well-maintained subdivision. What I would propose is allowing others the opportunity to own a small acreage property. Instead of building another R6 subdivision in CUNA, which there seem to be plenty of, why not build another R1 and provide the opportunity to others that we have? Bring more affluence to CUNA. I don't believe that the developer will have any trouble selling R1 homes, as evidenced by how quickly homes have sold recently that were listed in our subdivision. A comment was made just a minute ago that there was always a plan to add on to the subdivision, and there was. We are actually phase two of what was Chisholm Valley subdivision. But our understanding was that phase one was going to be an R1. If it was zoned R1 instead of R6, there would be more than enough access off Linder, and there would be no need to even tie into our subdivision and bring the additional traffic through, as well as it would not negatively impact our property values. You have an opportunity here to bring change to CUNA. Instead of approving yet another R4 to 6 subdivision of cookie-cutter homes, I encourage you to raise the bar. Let's promote long-term prosperity for CUNA. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Okay, thank you. Is there any questions for Virginia?
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Jenna Vonderay.
I live at 7601 South Chisholm Place. One point I want to point out, Ms. Miller put a map up there of low density, that we have plenty of it. She failed to include the subdivision of Silver Trail that has now infiltrated part of that yellow, that south. Yeah. So all those homes that are being built, those aren't included on that. It's still included as yellow.
And that was one of my examples of the comp plan.
Great. And then the high school property of all the homes just north of the high school that are going in. With regard to infrastructure, they said CUNA has tried to keep up on it, but they have mentioned nothing about with the high school going up the streets, getting out, or just our 25 homes in the morning to head west on Columbia is nearly impossible sometimes, and with the buses. As we know, Columbia is 50 miles an hour. Some of you know I've been given the privilege of servicing people with a local store here, and I love that. I've got pictures from the Historical Society, and I have them up in our store, and it is amazing to me to see the reflection that people have and the memories that they share by seeing pictures of CUNA, the open spaces, the memories that come through. I love talking to people every day when they come into this store. Growth is inevitable. However, the rapid growth of tract homes and nothing currently approved less than an R4, what legacy are we leaving? What pictures are our kids going to look at 30 years from now? What are they going to have? Oh, I remember. I don't remember that because I'll look just like the other subdivision. The pictures I have now, people truly reflect on that and have something to say about CUNA. And I think we're changing some of the landscape. And what I would recommend, as with Virginia, I'm not opposed to the growth. I'm opposed to using our subdivision as a throughway. But also, you'd have no problem selling R1. Everybody wants a piece of land to call their own and raise the bar. I would fully agree with that. Thank you for your time.
Okay. I think that is Lori?
Yeah.
Lori Allen?
Yeah.
My name is Lori Allen. I live at 7980 South Chisholm Way. I am just going to read off of here, and then if I have some time, I'll touch on some other stuff. We're located at 7980 South Chisholm Way, which is the first house in the subdivision entrance on the right. Traffic is already busy in and out of our subdivision, with the speed limit coming off of Columbia at 50 miles per hour. Vehicles are trying to slow down around the blind corner entering our subdivision and passing by our house. Their speeds are still high as motorists are slowing down to the 25 mile per hour subdivision speed. This is a very dangerous location. We have kids and have neighborhood kids visit us regularly, and they have no safe way to enter our house on their bikes but to cross through oncoming traffic on that blind corner. Currently, our subdivision has regular meetings addressing speed and the fact of kids being out and about. The increase in traffic from allowing a connection road through our subdivision will be increasing our risk significantly to have a fatal accident involving one of our children. This is unacceptable. We do not currently have sidewalks, walk paths, etc. to handle that traffic safely. Let this be noted that an incident would come back to the city or highway district for not protecting its citizens. I strongly urge you to ensure that we do not have connection through our subdivision. An R1 should never connect to an R6. If I have time, or if you, I don't know if you're familiar with our subdivision, it really is. Off of Columbia, you turn into our house, people are still just focusing on getting into the subdivision. 15 yards is our driveway. We've almost had a child hit racing out of the driveway and somebody not paying attention. I would encourage the sheriff here to come and visit and take the safety precautions of looking and testing how much traffic our subdivision can actually handle for 300 and 400 more homes to come through it. It's not safe for any of us. It's not safe for our children. We don't have sidewalks. We have children. We want outside lifestyles. You want to ride bikes, but you're taking away their safety. It's not possible to bring all of that traffic through our subdivision. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Jeff Hyerson signed up not to testify, but said he's sending a letter. Do we have that? Is that the one you were talking about, Troy, or?
No, that is not the one.
I think it's in the packet. I'm pretty sure.
Let's see it. What, how do you say your last name? I'm sorry.
Henriksen.
Yep, that one is included in the packet.
It is in the packet. So... So do you wish to testify to, since we don't have a, okay, all right, thank you very much.
Yeah, I show one in here.
Oh, there is one in there.
Page 168 of the packet. It's 52 of 79 of tab 6A.
Uh-huh. Okay, and council, I'm assuming, had a chance to read all those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, next we have Josh Riccardi. And I think there was a nice letter in there from him also.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very well written.
I have a few minutes at work. All right, Josh Riccardi, 7752 South McClintock. A few things we're going to talk about is rezoning. With the low-density plan, R6, R8, current development, we all see it. With our subdivision in your comprehensive plan, it kind of states as an estate. I see there's more estates in the comp plan for Outlet South and Cunamore Road, somewhere around there. Don't you take in consideration prior housing developments built to that attribute? Instead of start rezoning right around us, how about keep that same profile and standing we have now with our established community and connect onto it? So that's why, you know, I see an R1 up in there next to our communities to establish with our established community. The community is concerned about how many R6, R8 are being approved through the city. That is in the community survey of Kansas City, January 2018. There's 27 concerns listed in there. I think 16 were about as many R6 and R8s. So the community is speaking out in this. Through the comp plans, yes, 2008, correct? In 2015, I saw another one, a quick abbreviation on it. Reading that doesn't really take in consideration established communities already. So that's why we're getting a lot of kickback on why so many R6, R8s are being approved when there's established communities already in there that we can just connect to in the same style, R1s, R2s. So that's what I like to see. You know, we're not talking about connecting, but we are a rural R1 community. Okay, we do not have infrastructure, sidewalks, this and that, curbing, drainage, you name it. It's not there. Like all the other community members stated, there's kids. Kids are everywhere. All right. So putting a high density right above us, even if it is an R4, and possibly if it does connect, there's going to be a lot of traffic through there. That's just how it is. So I would like to see an R1, R2 be pushed up through there. Yes, I know the comp plan was 2005, 2008, but can't we reevaluate and look at that and see what we already have established and connect to it? And is that time? I was going pretty good on that one. 45 more seconds. All right, so listen. Last time I was right now. I like having the clock there. So, yeah, from that, you know, I just want to see an R1, R2 put up in there. Well, R6 is getting approved. We all see it, you know, all around CUNA. So can we go to, like, an Eagle lifestyle, you know, throw some more, you know, R2s up in there, a few R1s here and there, break it up. Instead of making it go all the way down to CUNA-Moore Road. That's it. All right, good. Eagle buzzer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so I would like to just mention that we are in the middle of a comprehensive plan rewrite. We call it Envision CUNA, because there were several things in there where we felt that the community input wasn't what it should be. So that's why we're going through that process. But I just wanted to point that out. Elena Iolfson.
Hi.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Elena Iolfson. I live at 7790 South McClintock. And I'm glad you actually mentioned that you are in the process of reviewing the comprehensive plan, because really that's what myself and all my neighbors are really asking you to do. The plan was, you know, developed over 10 years ago. A lot has changed, you know, the whole state of Idaho, it's growing. And for you guys to realize that and recognize that and, you know, make adjustments along the way, that's what we're asking for. Just like all of my neighbors, I moved to the Chisholm Valley subdivision because I was looking for a certain lifestyle. We spent over 10 years trying to find our dream home, our dream spot where we could, you know, kind of ease into retirement and enjoy a certain type of lifestyle. We wanted a little bit of property. And so, you know, with the plan that's, you know, been proposed for the north part of our subdivision, that just, it changes all of the dynamics of everything that we have in our subdivision right now. As Katie Miller suggested, we're not here to talk about, you know, the safety issues. We're not here to talk about the water issues. We're here just to talk about the density. And what we really feel is that there is already in this area a lot of high density homes, and that, you know, what we're really asking is to just reevaluate that, particularly as they connect. It's got a direct impact on our subdivision. As Josh mentioned, you know, you guys had a community survey that you put out, and, you know, it's not just our subdivision that is, obviously we're directly impacted by that impending subdivision, but all of the community, you know, are concerned about, you know, the growth of CUNA and how that's impacting, and this, the type of zoning that's happening, and, you know, that what we'd really like to see is a lower density of, you know, of zoning in CUNA. There's a lot of people, you know, that would love to have that. I mean, like I said, we looked for a long, long time before we could find it. And I think that people just would really gravitate towards that. And it's, you know, obviously we have a direct impact what's happening with our community, but it's kind of goes beyond that as well. So that's what we're just asking, to have that reconsidered and, you know, have that put forth. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Curtis Ward.
Thanks for having me. Curtis Ward with the 7941 South Chisholm Way. You know, echoing everything you've heard already, we've got a small 29, 28 house community. It's quiet. We walk our dogs at night. It's pitch black. You want to add 300 houses with traffic, no lights? I see trouble. So my thinking is R1, R2, let maybe or not connect, leave our community alone. That to me is the safest idea, because these kids are playing in the street. They're out riding the bikes, and people that we don't know are going to be moving in. You're looking at 300 houses, you're probably looking at 1,000 cars. Now you're going to put a school in. You're going to get people diverting through our subdivision, dropping kids off, coming out through other areas to take the kids. I mean, I watch all the time. I paint. I go into subdivisions all the time. I see what they do. So you're going to blow up our community. And it's kind of unfortunate. You know, I understand growth's coming, and we want that. It's a great thing. But we need to think about safety. We've all been there for 15 years in this subdivision, and now you're just flipping upside down. So my thinking is, be smart. Let's get along. Let's work together. Let's enjoy where we live. Let's, you know, obviously be safe. So pretty much all I have. It's they say, no, we're not talking about safety. We're talking about density. I'm talking about safety, because something's going to happen. That's all I got.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, now is when I get into this other sheet. Kelly Stevenson, oh, that's a not testify, not testify. Oh, I didn't see that one, no. Okay, these are all not testify. Stephanie Shank. That's why I put check marks there, so I don't miss one. I did it anyway.
Thank you very much. My name is Stephanie Shank. I live at 7825 South Chisholm Way. And I moved to the Chisholm Valley subdivision because it is a close community with an agricultural flavor. We garden. We're beekeepers. We keep farm animals. And we know our neighbors. I'm reading through my notes, and most of them have to do with the covering the irrigation. It was already covered. And, you know, and the, for safety, safety purposes, streets from a new high-density subdivision should not be connected to our rural county street. Like my neighbors, living in the Chisholm Valley subdivision is a choice. We chose our rural lifestyle, and we should be allowed to continue this. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so that's all that I had signed up to testify. Was there anybody else who wanted to sign up that didn't get a chance to? So we have one more there. Troy, I'll let you read that into the record if you would now, and I will have that gentleman sign up on the sheet while Troy's doing that.
Are these? Oh, not testifying.
No. Yeah, that's perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and let Troy get this done, and then I'll call you up. Thank you very much.
This letter regards to opposition to require connection to Whisper Meadow Subdivision. To whom it may concern, I write on behalf of Chisholm Valley Subdivision, which is located directly to the south of the proposed location for the Whisper Meadow Subdivision. I first wrote to oppose the development of Whisper Mountain Subdivision in a letter to the Planning and Zoning Commission on April 5, 2018. I addressed many of Chisholm Valley's concerns in that letter. Along with several other individuals in my subdivision, I attended the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting on April 10, 2018. During that meeting, the Commission discussed its concerns with allowing a major subdivision like Whisper Meadows to connect to our R1 subdivision that does not have any sidewalks or any other pedestrian friendly paths. Ultimately, I found that the Whisper Meadows developer should work with ACHD and the city to avoid connecting to our subdivision. While I understand that the issue will be addressed during the preliminary plat hearings, I wanted to provide my input at this time as well, because Planning and Zoning did consider the issue during the rezone hearing and recommended the above stated course of action. Chisholm Valley residents are concerned because the Whisper Meadows subdivision developer has suggested that connection between the two subdivisions is required by ACHD. We, however, disagree. According to ACHD Policy Manual 7207.2.4, the street design in a proposed development shall cause no undue hardship to adjoining property. An adequate and convenient access to property, to adjoining property for use in future development may be required. This section only provides that connections may be required between subdivisions, but in absolute terms, it states that such connections must not cause undue hardship to adjoining property. Connecting our subdivision to Whisper Meadows would undoubtedly cause undue hardship to our subdivision. Again, we are a very rural subdivision, and we don't have sidewalks. and our roads are, for the most part, unmarked. We are connected. We are concerned that because of the size of the proposed Whisper Meadows subdivision, traffic through Chisholm Valley will increase substantially. This will be very harmful to us. Further, ACHD Policy Manual 7207.2.4 provides several items ACHD is to consider in determining whether to extend streets between adjoining subdivisions. Those factors relate in large part to the neighborhood needs and provisions of services. It is unnecessary for our subdivision to be connected to Whisper Meadows in this situation because there are other more convenient and direct access points to the Whisper Meadows subdivision. Whisper Meadows will connect to Linder Road in various places, including through a new collector road midway between Columbia and Lake Hazel Road. These connections allow for necessary travel and provision of services. I cannot express enough my concern that linking our road would be detrimental to our community. I would have the safety features necessary to support such a large traffic increase through our subdivision, and the connection would endanger our children. For these reasons, we support the Commission's finding that there should be no connection between the subdivisions and request that all steps be taken to avoid connecting our subdivision with Whisper Meadows. We appreciate your consideration in this matter. Josh Riccardi.
Troy, we thank you very much for that, but you went 12 seconds over your time, so I'd appreciate it next time if you read faster.
I would respond, but that would add 15 more seconds.
Okay, and then we had Dan Wright.
Actually, sir, it's Drew Wright.
Drew, oh, okay.
So my printing is not very good.
But neither is my reading, so.
Good, thank you. I apologize to my folks for being a little bit late. I thought the meeting was at 7 o'clock for some reason and got busy at home. The one thing I wanted to bring out that was brought up at the zoning meeting that we did not have a chance to rebut was the developer indicated that our desire for this new subdivision to be zoned at a lower density rate, say an R1 or an R2, he indicated at the zoning meeting that it was not possible. And the city of Star, which is pretty close to a mirror image of what CUNA is, has a sewer plant there that was put in 1996. They do R1, R2, and R3 out there all the time. I talked with a friend of mine who used to work at the CUNA sewer facility, which was finished in 2010, and he said the density of an area has nothing to do with the capability of that area to bring waste to the sewer plant. And I read up on lift stations, and it says lift stations are used to reduce the capital cost of a sewer construction system. When gravity sewers are installed in trenches deeper than three meters, the cost of the sewer line installation increases significantly because of the more complex and costly excavation equipment and trench soaring techniques required. The size of the gravity sewer lines is dependent upon the minimum pipe slope and flow. Pumping wastewater can convey the same flow using smaller pipeline size at shallower depth, thereby reducing the pipeline costs. In other words, that subdivision can be zoned at a lower density rate with no effect whatsoever on the capability for the sewer lines to get that waste to the sewer plant. And I just wanted to make sure that this organization was aware of that, and that if somebody indicates to you that it's not possible to put an R1 or R2 or R3 there because of the sewer capability, I stand by the information here that it is possible. So that's pretty much what I had to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone have any questions for Drew? Okay. All right, that's all I have. Did everybody get a chance to speak that wanted to? Okay. So, rebuttal.
Good evening, Mayor Sterren, Council Members. Thank you for your work this evening and your ongoing dedication to the City of CUNA. My name is Tim Eck. I am the applicant. I have a lot to say, so I'll read this very quickly. Our application before you this evening is for a rezone only. This is not a preliminary plat submittal, so all issues that pertain to preliminary plat, including transportation, safety, traffic concerns, will be addressed within our traffic impact study at preliminary plat. So those issues should be deferred until a preliminary plat comes before you. However, I will try to provide rebuttal to all the comments raised this evening by oral testimony or written submittal, and then we'll stand for any questions. The west half of the property is 36.776 acres in the comp plan as medium density residential. Medium density residential anticipates, allows, and expects R4, R6, and R8 zones. Our maximum density at R8 would be 295 residential units. The east half of the property is 36.382 acres in the comp plan as mixed use general. Mixed use general has a footnote that states mixed use general expect the residential densities can range from 2 to 20 units per acre. Our maximum density on this half of the site at 20 units per acre would be 727 residential units. At build out, at the maximum densities expected in the comp plan, we would be submitting a rezone application that would allow for 1,022 residential units. R6 is well within the allowed zones expected in the comp plan. On our west half, R6 is exactly in the middle of the expected zones. On the mixed use half, R6 is 30% of the expected densities. Our request is well below the densities expected by and planned by CUNA when the comp plan was developed and approved over 10 years ago. We are anticipating 310 residential lots, placing us at 30.33% of the maximum densities expected in the comp plan. The property was annexed as part of the LID 2006 LID. The property was rolled in the wastewater LID and assessed accordingly for no less than 3 EDUs per acre. The comp plan and its land use designation identify densities and the types of development that CUNA planned for in this area for over 10 years. The comp plan was adopted well after Chisholm Valley was developed. CUNA identified the growth demand within and outside the city limits, further identifying the densities and types of developments they expected and needed in order to plan and design the city infrastructure necessary for the city to grow. Understanding expected growth in this area, CUNA strategically located the CUNA North Wastewater Treatment Facility 1/4 mile from our northwest corner. CUNA has been planning and improving the city infrastructure to accommodate the expected growth in this area, including a regional wastewater lift station built immediately adjacent to our northeast corner. CUNA required that the lift station include oversized design and construction specifically to service this property based on the expected densities in the comp plan. CUNA has planned and constructed a pressurized irrigation pump station immediately east of the property, also sized to supply this property based on the densities expected in the comp plan. All utilities required to develop this property exist along the Linner Road frontage or at the northeast corner of the site. The CUNA School District relied on the densities expected in the comp plan, recognized the current growth patterns, and strategically purchased acreage, and are currently designing a new high school contiguous to the east boundary of the site. They also acquired a 52-acre site where the Silver Trail Elementary School exists. The Silver Trail Elementary School sits on about 10 acres. The additional 42-acre school expansion to service the expected growth in the comp plan. The site is centered between six residential developments with similar densities identified as medium density residential. They all provide a mixture of lot size that will accommodate a mixture of house sizes complying with CUNA's vision for diverse housing. All of these developments are being developed at the lowest densities expected in medium density residential. This is the density expected and planned for by CUNA for over 10 years. The planned density in the comp plan for this site expected up to 329% of the density we're planning. As an accommodation to Chisholm Valley, we plan to place a buffer zone of large lots along our south boundary, contiguous to Chisholm Valley, resulting in density contiguous to Chisholm Valley at less than 2.3 units per net acre. That would equate to less than 2 lots per gross acre. These lots will range from 12,564 square feet to 20,430 square feet. This will be confirmed when we come forward with our preliminary plat. Unit planning and zoning at the direction of the city engineer discourages plats that consist of excessive low density. Sewer mains require volume to scour. Insufficient flow resulting from lower densities will result in sewer flows inadequate to scour the pipes and result in excessive maintenance. The city engineer has advised that he would not support a plat of half acre or larger lots. That was Mr. Law. I know he's retired now, but that was his opinion. CUNA's comp plan identifies significant areas of low density residential. We are not in an area of low density residential. While a small group of people want to believe that everyone would want an acre, they fail to understand how few people can afford an acre lot. The cost of an acre lot is approximately 4 times the cost of a quarter acre lot. The cost to build sidewalk, curb, gutter, road, sewer, water, pressurized irrigation are directly tied to the size and frontage of the lot. Therefore, it's easy to see that a 240-foot wide lot will cost 4 times as much to improve as a 60-foot wide lot. If our R4 lot costs $70,000, you can expect that a one-acre lot will cost between $250,000 and $280,000. Using a typical ratio that land is 25% of the total house cost, this would result in home prices between $1 million and $1,120,000 dollars. There's simply not a market for lots or homes at that price in CUNA. Example for large lot development failures are Arrow Rock and Mineral Springs. Arrow Rock plat was recorded in about 2005 with 60 or more 1 acre plus or minus lots. The lack of demand resulted in default by the developer. The property was foreclosed. After the bank foreclosed, they sold off the remaining lots at short sale price. The buyer began building spec houses and offering lots for build jobs. The sales rate has been a miserable 5 to 6 units per year. Mineral Springs recorded a 12-lot plat of half-acre lots on January 20th, 2017. As of April 13th, when I run the numbers, 2018, the developer still owned all the half-acre lots. Chisholm Valley is a county plat. It's not annexed into the city of CUNA. They do not pay city tax assessments. It was developed as a county non-far plat, a loophole that allowed a 1-acre lot development in a 10-acre ag zone. This type of development provided an opportunity to build a very inexpensive county development of 1-acre lots with minimal improvements. Earlier non-farm developments relied on septic tanks, individual wells. These lots went on the market starting at about $35,000. Eventually, the county started rejecting these developments with septic tanks and community waste systems came into existence. This drove the prices up to $45,000. These small community wastewater systems allowed 20 years ago are now non-conforming and do not meet DEQ standards. This type of development is prohibited within the city, and I do not believe you could obtain approval of a non-farm in the county today due to unavailable wastewater disposal options. Developing a Chisholm Valley type plant in the county was very easy when it was allowed. You lay out your lot, build a basic road section, borrow a ditch, bring your power and telephone, private irrigation. When this is done, you could improve a 1-acre lot for $10,000 to $15,000 per lot. With improvement costs that low, you could sell lots back then for $35,000, $45,000 a lot. We're in the city of CUNA. Mandatory minimum improvements in the city include sidewalk, curb, gutter, stormwater collection and conveyance, stormwater seepage beds, sewer main extension, sewer main oversizing for upstream capacity, domestic water oversizing for downstream capacity, pressurized irrigation oversizing for downstream capacity, power, gas, phone, cable TV, subdivision boundary fence, mid-mile collector roads, landscape buffers along arterial and collector roads, arterial road widening, off-site road improvements, off-site water, off-site sewer, PI main extensions. All utilities have to be constructed to and through, stub the streets to adjacent properties, sewer connection fees, sewer interceptor fees, domestic water connection fees, and pressure irrigation connection fees. All of these are expensive costs of improvement that did not exist in a county non-farm. On 4/13/18, we reviewed the Ada County Assessor's assessed values of the lots in Chisholm Valley. That's on the next screen. The assessed values range from $299,400 to $491,600 with an average assessed value of $389,903. Currently, we are building spec homes in CUNA subdivisions, in our CUNA subdivisions, with prices up to $390,000. There are other build jobs reporting prices exceeding $500,000. The average price of the spec homes in four of our developments in CUNA exceed $302,000. Clearly, we're not producing entry-level or starter homes. With the average spec home price exceeding $302,000, we will generate an assessed value per acre for property taxation exceeding $1.2 million. That's more than triple the average assessed value per acre in Chisholm Valley. Therefore, the property taxes generated per acre in Whisper Meadows will be three times the property taxes generated per acre in Chisholm Valley. I have comments and answers about their traffic concerns that I'm glad to share with you if you like. Their traffic concerns are a transportation issue. It should be reviewed at the preliminary plat application, not a zoning application. This includes my rebuttal. I'll stand for any questions. My attorney would like to step up and finish what's left in my 10 minutes.
Real quickly, Jeff Bauer, attorney for the applicant. I want to touch on the conditions of approval that have come to the forefront. Just to be clear, the applicant does accept all of the conditions of approval in Section O of tonight's application prepared by staff. We do want to talk about the recommended conditions from the P&Z Commission, though. First is the density limitation, 4.25 units per acre. We still accept that. That was offered by us at the last meeting. Quickly, the second condition, though, the recommendation for limitations on connectivity. I could ask for one more minute from the council to touch on this.
Okay.
We'd ask that you reject that recommendation for a few reasons. The first is it's premature. We're here on a rezone. We have not put forth any street design.
ACHD's comment letter to you on this application states the same. Page 7 of that letter says they will weigh on this at a future time on a future development. Second, the streets at issue, Chisholm Valley and McClintock, they are public roads, ACHD roads, dedicated in 1999. They were stubbed. They are not dead ends. They're not cul-de-sacs. They were always anticipated to be through streets. Third, ACHD policy manual does require connectivity of through streets. Fourth, your own city code, section 6-3-3, also requires connectivity for substreets. This is in your subdivision design guidelines. This is for various reasons. Most importantly, as ACHD has stated, connectivity reduces vehicle miles traveled, increases safety. I'll rest with that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So I'll stand for any questions you may have, and specifically questions? If you have questions pertaining to the traffic concerns. It's really outside of a zoning application, but if you want to inquire about that, I'll be glad to provide you the answers to your questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. F.
I got a question for you, Tim. When you look at rezoning a piece of land such as that, do you take into consideration the surrounding viewpoints of what's going on, or do you just look at that one piece of land that may have been dedicated 10 years ago as a medium density zone? So anything that happens to be in a place like Chisholm Valley, and you look at the comprehension plan that does warrant a medium zone, do you ever take into consideration the scenery of what you're doing to that area in respect to the amount of homes and things?
You know, we take a look at what the comp plan that has been set forth by the Planning and Zoning and City Council for over a decade now anticipates, expects, and tells us to do. We anticipate that zoning is going to fall within the allowance of the comp plan. We are on the very, very bottom of the zoning expected in our comp plan designation. Medium density residential starts at R4, goes to R8. We're only proposing 4.25 units per acre. So we're keeping the density way down. We also lay out very specifically a buffer zone, as you've seen in previous plats and you will see on this plat. We'll have less than two lots per gross acre contiguous to Chisholm Valley. And if we did the whole subdivision at two lots per acre, you'd have the same density contiguous to them. We'll be at, I gave you the lot dimensions. We do have a plat laid out. It's just not ready to come forward yet. They will be very large lots contiguous to them at an average of less than two lots per gross acre. We look at the infrastructure that the city's designed and put in, the expense that the city's gone through to provide service to certain areas. You know, there's a lift station literally across the street from us that is designed for this to accept flow from this development at the densities, actually much greater density than we're proposing. The design, when that lift station was designed, the engineer looked at the land use designation in the comp plan and determined how many units he expected to be flowing into this lift station that pumps into the CUNA wastewater treatment plant, which, by the way, the CUNA wastewater treatment plant currently does not take any sewer directly from gravity. It all has to go through a pressurized irrigation system to pump into the plant, or pressurized lift station to go into the plant. Gravity sewer is the primary desire. Lift stations are not the most desirable thing to use. They're not going to allow us to go in and put in lift stations if we can gravity sewer something. So we look at the infrastructure. We work with the city engineer. We find out where they've anticipated the growth, where they have the infrastructure going, where it's planned, where the improvements are going. And then we try to, you know, meet the plans of the city as designated in the comp plan and as designated or as serviced by the city's improvement infrastructure.
Am I hearing that there's really no chance in convincing you to do a lower designated zone?
I mean, R4 is right at the bottom right now. I mean, basically, we were already assessed 3 EDUs an acre. You know, that's guaranteed with the LID. The R1 doesn't work. Bring me the group of buyers that's going to come in and spend $250,000 for, and there is no such thing as an R1 in Kuna. One-acre development doesn't work. The city engineer has told me he wouldn't support it because the sewer mains will not scour. There's not adequate flow going through the 8-inch sewer main to keep the pipes clean. So I've already got direction from the city engineer, Mr. Law, who's retired now, that he would not support a development of one-acre lots. One-acre lots are not affordable. I got to put in all these improvements that I read out very quickly, which cost millions of dollars in a development like this. To develop a one-acre lot development in the city of CUNY, you're looking at $250,000 lots. There's no market. I don't even know if there's a market for quarter-acre lots. Yeah, there is in Dick Baker subdivision off of Eagle Road out there, where it's all on great big lakes, but you're not going to build one-acre lots in CUNA and sell them for $250,000. And you're not going to build million-dollar homes and have a viable market for them. And then we'd be just like the other subdivisions that tried one-acre lots and failed. 5 to 6 sales a year. And even with those lots, it's just because those lots were, I don't know if they were non-farm, but I believe they're on an SBR system, and I believe they might be on wells. And I doubt that they have any of the improvements in infrastructure that we got to put in. They don't have all the landscape buffers and all the landscape that we got to put in, all the fencing that we got to put in, all the improvements that we have to put in that make our quarter-acre lots cost $70,000 a lot. You jump that to a one-acre lot, and you're looking at a $250,000 lot. There's no market for it.
Okay. I have one more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I appreciate you using those other examples, and just for my lack of knowledge on Mineral Springs, I should be more aware of it, but I'm not. Where is that located?
Mineral Springs is on the corner of this particular phase is on the corner of School Street and Ardell.
It's 10, if you got 10 Mile, Columbia, I'm sorry, Hubbard and Deer Flat, it's right in here. It will eventually, Ardell will eventually connect. So, but 10 Mile between Hubbard and Deer Flat.
I believe it was originally anticipated to be commercial, and they decided to go with half-acre lots there. And like I said, the plat was recorded in January of 2017. And after the planning and zoning meeting, I went back and checked the ownership of all 12 lots. And they're all still owned by the developer. So in 14 months, they had not been able to sell a half-acre lot. And they're asking about $96,000 to $100,000 apiece. How would I sell one-acre lots for $200,000 apiece if there's such a slow absorption rate on half-acre lots?
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it.
Okay. Further questions for Tim?
And were there any questions about the traffic concerns?
No, not for me.
Hello? Okay. No, I'm afraid that's not. No, I'm sorry.
Mayor, I'd like to just ratify that they had remaining time left from their original presentation, and that was the time that I put on for their one-minute request on the rebuttal.
Okay.
That's on our rebuttal.
Okay. Does council have any other questions of anyone before we close the public hearing?
I don't.
Move
we close public hearing?
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
I'm sorry for the confusion here. Are we voting on the approval rezone, or is this just to close it?
Close the public hearing.
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar.
Yes.
Okay. The question of the rezone of 18-01-ZC is rightfully before council.
I guess I'll start, I guess.
Okay.
The least that we could go on this, Wendy, is R4. I have felt the roads of CUNA have become very inadequate with Ada County Highway District not keeping up. The school is starting to get congested. I've seen some of these subdivisions that Tim has done, and I'm very happy with them, Tim. I think you're very agreeable to most of the neighbors to your subdivisions. I would like to see an R4 there at the minimum, since our hands are tied with the comp plan. So,
just to clarify, Rich, the 4.25 that they are offering to agree to, do you want it to be 4?
With an R6, they can go down to 4 point.
Right. I mean, we'd have to approve an R6. But with the condition that it would actually be a 4.25, is that acceptable to you, or you wouldn't accept anything greater than 4.0?
I guess I have mixed emotions, because it sounds like Tim is trying to be a good neighbor and putting along the perimeter the 2 homes per acre. Which I have mixed emotions, because that puts some of the other acres at maybe 5 homes per acre. So you got to make it up somewhere, won't you, Tim? Can he come up and answer?
Not now. We've
okay. So until the comp plan is reevaluated, I think as a council our hands are pretty much tied on some of these. Again, in the past, Mr. Rick has been very congenial with his neighbors, trying to work out a solution that's agreeable to all. I would be happy with the 4.2, is it?
4.25.
As long as the buffer zone would be retaining the 2 homes to an acre. That would be one of the conditions I would put in the acceptance.
Is that appropriate to include in here, or would it be something that we would just impose at the platting stage?
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar, it would be appropriate as a condition in your findings today.
I'm done.
Warren?
I don't know. I tend to echo a lot of what Richard said, in that having the comp plan set out to zone that, you know, it takes Tim a lot of it takes a lot for Tim to work with the neighbors like he does. And looking at that two homes per gross acre to accommodate Chisholm, that really just It's just a tough situation overall. I have very mixed emotions about it right now. I mean, I don't know where to go from there, but I don't know. I think all are very accommodating at this point.
So. Is there anything that makes it one way or the other for you?
it's just the first step, and I think with what we're seeing in the growth in CUNA, at some point I feel like we have to take responsibility for what's going on out there. I know this is a rezone, and we're not talking about preliminary plat stuff, and that's why I'll stay away from that, but at some point, just saying our hands are tied because a comprehension plan written 10 years ago is written in stone, sometimes that just doesn't sit well. We got to look at what's happened over the last 10 years and go from there on decisions like that. So it's just a part where I feel like I have to take responsibility sometimes to see what's been going on over the last even 2-3 years or 5 years, and it makes the decisions tough. There's really no one way or the other on that.
Okay.
Oh, are you waiting for me to talk?
You are.
I mean, his proposal complies with the comp plan. I appreciate that, despite the fact that the current zoning would allow for much higher densities, Mr. Eck has been willing to go with housing densities that are at the much lower end of both of the existing zoning. I feel like 4.25 is probably a fair compromise, especially with the two homes per gross acre as a border. I am one of the people who has been loudly beating the drum of wanting larger lot sizes and an opportunity for people to have the next step up from their starter home. I don't think that Mineral Springs hit that point. I'm hopeful that homes in the 0.2 to 0.25 acre range will provide at least somewhat of a step up at still a more reasonable price point. And a lot of the other concerns I think will be appropriately addressed in the platting stages. But the request complies with the comp plan, so I'm inclined to grant the request with the modifications or the conditions of approval that we've discussed.
Okay.
Any other discussion?
Any further discussion?
Okay. There's a lot written in the packet. I'll just cover, I guess, some of it briefly. As I already mentioned, I do think that, well, the proposal does comply with the comp plan. I do think that it will meet our comp plan goals in terms of providing a greater variety of residential options. I don't know that we'll ever get to 1-acre lots. It's something that I think would be cool, but I just don't know if I don't think this is the appropriate venue to kind of force that one. I know this is coming down the road, but I'm appreciative of the intent to kind of facilitate some more pedestrian connections, get greater connectivity, especially with the school being located nearby. And to add some additional open spaces, which is another comp plan goal. So let's see. It appears to comply with CUNA City Code as well as the comp plan, as I mentioned. And it looks like we met all the requirements with regard to noticing and conducting the public hearing. So let's see. Apologies. All right, I think this is the right section. So I move we approve case number 1801ZC with the conditions of approval as listed in the packet, as well as ensuring that the actual density will not exceed 4.25 homes per acre, and that there will be enforced in the plat when it comes to us a density of 2 homes per gross acre along the border with the existing sub to kind of provide an ease of transition.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for approval. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you all very much. Next, we have a public hearing in consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-21. Richard Roach, city attorney.
Before you tonight is a consideration to amend our city code regarding final plat for bonding items.
We can pass them if you want.
The discussions came up with staff and some developers on making a modification to our code regarding the bonding of certain items. As you recall, we have previously and currently, we require certain things to be completed and signed off beforehand. Significantly in this amendment to the code is the ability to bond for some roads. With the time delays that are going on with ACHD and stuff, we felt that maybe we could facilitate a more expedient process. ACHD allows for bonding, so we were kind of holding that whole process up on the bonding issue with the roads requiring those to be completed before we'd sign off on the final plat. That's the biggest change in it. The other thing, just kind of clean some stuff up. I handed a document to you that makes two minor changes to what was in the packet, adding under I, 3 was the landscaping that had been moved but deleted erroneously, and then 6 moved up, H6 moved up just to make it make sense. Those are the two highlighted things, so I'd ask in your consideration that those be included. So you'll see here that there are things that can be bonded for in the streets, other things, things that are now required to be completed and continue to be required to be completed for the plat are the domestic water system, fire hydrants, sanitary sewer system. Those things are unchanged. So really what we're doing is the roadways, they have to be an all-surface roadway, and then some of those other things, landscaping, fencing, those things sometimes came up. It was landscaping before was permitted seasonal, but there's times when it can't be done for whatever reason, and we didn't have a bonding provision for that. So it kind of cleans things up, makes it more streamlined, and then it allows, as you'll note, that if those all-weather roads are being constructed, the developer can put up to 3 model homes in. So when they start that process of putting in the infrastructure, the all-surface roads. They can also start those model homes at that time in this proposal. So I will stand for any questions.
Questions for Richard?
None from me.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, this is a public hearing, so we'll go ahead and accept a motion to open the public hearing.
Move we open the public hearing for Ordinance 2018-21.
You have a second?
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. So again, I did have a sign-up sheet on this, and I think they made a mistake when they signed in. Is there anyone in the audience that wanted to speak on this issue that didn't get a chance to sign up? Okay. Seeing none, there is no testimony, so I will accept a motion to close the public hearing.
I move to close the public hearing. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to close the public hearing. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
All right. And so the ordinance number 2018-21 is rightfully before council.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2018-21.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance number 2018-21. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2018-21.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar, does that motion to approve include the two changes as suggested?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Do you have a second?
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2018-21 with the changes. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council Member Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
And that motion carries.
Move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-21.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-21. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. That's all we have for public hearings. Number item 7A is to introduce our Economic Development Director, Lisa Holland. Lisa, do you want to come up and introduce yourself? I'll tell you, when Lisa was looking for the job, I've worked with her with BVAP a few times, and I was very impressed, and she came highly recommended, and I think she's going to be a great fit for our city, so I'm really excited to have you on board.
Thanks, Mayor. Again, my name is Lisa Holland. Mayor and Council, I'm really excited and humbled for the opportunity to work with the City of CUNA. Doing economic development, I've come from a background of working with the Boise Valley Economic Partnership for over 7 years, doing regional economic development, and just see that this is a community with a lot of great potential, and look forward to learning from all the community citizens, council members, the mayor, and working to continue building the city of CUNA in the right way so that we all have a great place that CUNA can call home. Happy to answer any questions, and I look forward to meeting with all of you.
Good. They may have any questions. Lisa.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. We're excited to have you. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming out tonight.
My sympathy goes out to you.
Police impact case study and committee request. John McDaniel, police chief.
Hello again, Mayor, members of the council. Tonight I ask for permission to convene a police impact fee committee, as well as I ask for $2,000 of funds for a consultant to study and coordinate that committee. With the growth comes the need to plan for a police department. CUNA Police is currently in a four-bedroom house owned by the CUNA School District. We we have adequate space right now. I think there are some issues with secure parking and maybe some minor safety issues, but we know that the need is coming, that we're going to need more space. I have asked the five members of the current fire district impact fee committee if they'd be willing to be a part of a police impact fee committee, if the council so agrees to that, and they all five said that they would be part of that committee. So the $2,000 fee is one third of the cost of what Ann with Galena Consulting charged the fire department. And the reason for that significant discount is a lot of the data and calculations can, or in a time frame, but they can still be used per state code. And so I did want to mention as well as that $2,000 fee, talking with Richard, is reimbursable if we choose to with the first impact fees that would come in, if that's something that the committee decided we had a need and you accepted. So ask for permission to convene that committee. I stand for any questions.
Yeah, so the kind of the role of this is, you know, we did a study with the park impact fee, but those numbers were getting old, and the fire district just did theirs with Galena, she had talked, chief had talked to her, and she agreed to do that for a third of the cost of what it cost the fire district, just using a lot of that information already. So it just seemed like a really good idea to go that way. And Richard, go ahead.
You're asking $200,000 more for the, why don't you take it out of that $200,000 and then we'll reimburse you when we get the money back?
Wow. Great question.
You are a genius.
I wish the state code allowed us to use some of the impact fees for staffing. I have to get a lobby together and get that a little more in our favor.
I think I'm speaking for the majority of the council. I believe probably for the new gentleman here. I think we all agree that growth should pay for itself. An impact fee is a fair, I think, a very fair imposition on the public. So I'd have no problem with the $2,000, considering we went, or the fire department went, $6,000. So. Hmm. If the figures are used concurrently and quickly before they change. So if you have it done by tomorrow at 9, we'd be fine with it.
Yes. And it's just preliminary talks, but, you know, we're looking at potentially other stakeholders, whether that be South County. They've been looking for a substation. It's in the county master plan that they build something, and we'd love to have a combined space that's within city limits. It could be an advantage to the city of Keweenaw. So they might be able to chip in some funds, and some preliminary talks with the school district as well. That might be a possibility for both land and a shared maybe training area. So some neat partnerships might happen here.
I don't know if it's agreeable or even permissible or acceptable. The fire department is looking for a north plant or facility. Would it be possible for the police department to add to that facility so they're available with the fire department in the same complex, or is that legally not available, Mayor?
No, we can do shared services. I mean, we do that already, and that'd be kind of the same deal as the county officers and our city police sharing a station. So they want to look at all sorts of different options and see what works out the best. So
Chief Palmer's been very gracious with the offer to, you know, as we move east at, you know, Cluna and Cloverdale and even north, you know, they're planning stations in both areas, and he's been very gracious with offering up, as I eventually assign, you know, a deputy that, as an officer that's assigned to just kind of stay in their area unless there's a major emergency somewhere else. You know, a space for them to write reports and use the restroom and things like that. And this would be more of a you know, central police station that I would want, you know, closer to our 11, soon to be 12 schools and our, you know, banks and our businesses downtown.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is this a motion that he wants the $2,000? Okay.
It would be, so am I correct that the committee would then determine about reimbursing us, or is that something that we need to request on the front end?
I believe the committee would have to expend the funds.
Okay.
Go ahead, Richard.
Mayor, the funds for the reimbursement will come when the fees are starting to be generated. State code allows either a tax, a one-time tax to be put on for the study, or reimbursement. So once those fees are then generated, then they'll be reimbursed at that time.
Okay.
All right. Citing, I think, the ever-increasing need for more police and our interest in having growth pay for itself, I move we authorize the expenditure of up to $2,000 from the contingency fund to be used to reconvene the Fire Impact Fee Committee to function as a Police Impact Fee Committee to advise on potential police impact fee.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Discussion on parking area off Strobel Road with funding request. Bobby Withrow.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I just realized I did not send you the memo I had typed. Instead, there was proposed property upgrades. I do apologize for that, so I kind of feel like I'm blindsiding you. As many of you know, we've been talking about doing a parking site at Strobel Road where many people put in to float the creek right now. Me and the mayor sat down with Sid Anderson to talk about potentially leasing some of the land there for parking and a lease agreement that would come with that. The lease agreement would probably be year to year. I'm not here to discuss the lease agreement. I'm here to ask for city or council's basically ask for money to get all the parking up and going, and for the Anderson's request for a lease. Talking to him, he said that a lease agreement of $10,000 per year minus what we put into the property sounded fair to him. If we went through and budgeted $10,000 and we put $5,000 in, then his lease for that year would be $5,000. This first year, I'm anticipating about $8,000 in costs to get the site ready for parking. So this year, his lease agreement would be, or his lease, the part that he would get would be $2,000. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes.
So tonight I'm asking to, with council's permission, to ask for the $10,000 and then start working with Richard on a lease agreement with the Andersons so we can get parking off Strobel Road.
Is there a reason we can't wait to approve the funds until after we see the lease?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
I like that thought, honestly.
Okay.
I mean, we approve funds and the lease comes back all crazy. We're kind of...
Well, the council has to approve the lease anyway. So,
right.
So.
But are we approving $10,000 now? We can't withdraw that $10,000 if the lease comes back and we disapprove of the lease.
It wouldn't be spent.
Okay. Is parking that bad on Strobel?
It is.
Is it?
They fill up the half mile...
Oh, my gosh.
And for farmers that drive down the road, it becomes a one-lane road.
Sounds like it's needed, so.
Is that going to be available year-round, or is he going to put stipulation that we only use it for 3 months? Or?
We can put it in there. It could be used year-round.
Okay. Because I think June, July, and August, it probably be 3 months that you have water in the creek. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. In essence, you know, would we be paying $10,000 for 3 months, or are we paying $10,000 for a year then I wanted understood if he was to use that to park his equipment on, that he would have to pay his rent back.
Okay.
I think it's excessive at $10,000, to be honest. That's $3,000 a month during the summer.
Yeah.
So, but.
Well, we can also look into purchasing the property. Right now, a lease is kind of an easy way to get the cars off the road and make that area safer, so we can come up with a better way to, or a safer way.
I think a safer way would be have a bus running back and forth, but that would probably be more than $10,000. But because what you have is you got people leaving vehicles there, and then other ones driving back to CUNA and then going back, so you've got duplication of traffic back and forth. Mm-hmm. It becomes a mess there, but I don't have the answer other than a transit bus back and forth. So. And the mayor would be glad to drive the bus.
Didn't you just buy a big motorhome, a diesel pusher? I think that would work.
Forget the bus, though.
So you're going to drive everybody?
Yeah.
Thank you, Richard.
Volunteer, not paid.
Anyway, I would like to see the lease, what it encompasses.
Okay. So.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right, very good. So we're down to the discussion then, going back to the consent agenda, 4C, 1, and 2. Richard had some questions for Richard.
Okay. Go ahead.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. For the record, Richard Rooks. I'll just stand for your questions on those two resolutions.
Okay. My question is on R33-208, which is on page 1 under 4C1. The very last sentence says, allows the mayor to revoke the signature of an authorized public official and providing an effective date. Since what I'm worried about, and I've told the mayor, is
he thinks I'll go rogue.
Exactly. So what you have is you've got a council that is accountable for the money in the city. You've got a council president who is on that board that can sign. There always exists the possibility that a mayor, and this has nothing to do with Mr. Steer, but if there is hard feelings between the mayor and the city president, council president, he can revoke that power that is the authority of the council. So I would like to see rather than just the president, any council person have the authority to sign that, so the authority still stays with the council, as opposed to just the council president.
So where are you suggesting the change then?
Well, I think it says on where did I see it? Originally, I thought I read that it was just the mayor, the council president, and the city
treasurer,
I thought. What, am I missing something here now?
So you've got number one, that those that can make operational changes, the city treasurer, mayor, and the council. And then number two is drafts, city treasurer and either of the mayor or council, and then the signatures. So,
you know what? I wondered if I've seen it today going
through.
No,
it's in here. It's on the very last B be it further resolved by the mayor and council of the city of CUNA that on the second meeting in January of each year is needed due to personnel changes. The city council will by resolution authorize those persons who are authorized to sign in the city's various cash depositories for the current year, and the mayor shall have the authority to revoke the signature person so authorized to sign on behalf of the city. That's the part you're worried about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would the mayor have that much authority over a signature? The only time I could see that would come into play is if you've got disagreement between the mayor and the president of the council. He has the power to revoke he or she's signature. Why you would do that, I don't know, but why did you specifically put this into the...
My thought, Councilmember Cardoza, was not along the lines of that situation, but a situation where if we had one of the signing persons who left employment and we needed to get that revoked before we were able to get it to council so we could stop that signature process of those that individual. Not, and maybe the intent in that was more along the lines of an employee versus a council.
But his or her authority would cease when he left the employment. So why would the mayor have to?
Well, we have to transmit something to the bank to let them know that. They have a signature card there,
okay,
that says, you know, somebody can sign this, and we need to let them know that that person is no longer an authorized signer for these accounts.
Okay. Would it be better to have all four city councilmen authorized to sign the second signature is, I guess, one of my questions, as opposed to just the president, so that there is ample signatures available? Let me ask you one more question. Are we bonded as a city council to be signing on those? Is the mayor bonded? Yes, ma'am. City clerk?
I apologize. Bonded, I can't answer that. I am not aware of the council or the mayor being bonded for signature.
But for the signature for the money that may be misappropriated.
I am not aware of any bonding in that circumstance, no.
I'd be curious if other cities do that.
Do you know that the bank requires us to provide them with a copy of the resolution and the signature cards together in order to provide signature authority?
Okay. My concern would be anybody that has the authority to sign should be bonded, simply because there is no recourse to the city other than the courts. With a bond, we would have the recourse of the bonding company giving back whatever was misappropriated.
So that question would go to ICRIMP, since they're okay. Insurance. Yes.
I believe ICRIMP provides coverage for that in the particular cases where there have been employees who have embezzled from an entity. ICRIMP's gone in and provided coverage to that. So,
okay, check so on that. So there's no need to bond.
Correct.
Okay. Would you make sure, though, Richard,
yes,
there is okay. My question goes back to, if you're going to allow the mayor to revoke the signature of any authorized public official, then I would like to see all four councilmen to be on that signature card. So that would mean every 2 years you would change the card.
Would it cover your concern if we modified this so it basically gave the mayor the authority to, like, revoke a signature for a 2-week period, like, and then subject to council, whatever, either concurring in the revocation or authorizing a new signatory. My thought being, if the primary concern is somebody leaves before a council meeting convenes, and so we need to immediately revoke their signing authority, we would always be having a council meeting, in theory, within 2 weeks of that occurring. So would that way there's an immediate check on whatever the action was. If the council doesn't end up concurring in the revocation, it's nullified, essentially. Would that cover it?
I don't have a problem with that. My problem is, why don't we have all four of the councilmen's signatures on the card? So if Brianna happens to be in Arizona at a class for a week and Bill happens to be sick, you can call on any councilman to come in and sign because they have the authority to for the second signature.
How it reads is either so the treasurer signs and then okay. It's the mayor or the council president. And I think that's the duties of the council president to step in when the mayor is not available. So
yes.
Historically, the mayor is signing as that second signature in those. I don't think that we want to delegate that all the way down. I think the way it is now is the mayor is available to sign those things, and then if not, it rolls down to the council president.
I do.
Go ahead.
No, I do like what Brianna said in regards to. I think that's a good idea because it solidifies what the purpose of this is trying.
Yeah, let me suggest the language there. To revoke in an emergency and set action upon the concurrence of council at the next regularly scheduled meeting. So in an emergency, mayor can revoke, and then that action is brought before council for concurrence at that next meeting. Does that work?
Yeah. Are you suggesting that specific language?
Yes.
I might suggest that in order that this doesn't get overly long and cumbersome, we make it a second sentence. So it would say that on the second meeting in January, city's various cash depositories for the current year period, the mayor shall have the authority, and then it'll be a second sentence. Does that sound okay? Okay.
Da-da-da-da-da, was that five does?
Yeah.
So just to go back to the intent of this was, as you know, John left, Bill came on, we needed to update the signature cards and to comment on one of your things about every 2 years. The intent of this was to change the procedure. As I was looking at the resolution, you may, if you had looked at the redline version, every time there was a change, we were just bringing forward this resolution with the name change of that person contained in there, which I think was in paragraph two. So this resolution, if approved, will be unchanged. That paragraph then will require, which is 34, 2018, in the second meeting in January of every year, we will reappoint those people for signature. So that second resolution will be the one that's changing. And I think it's best, probably along the financial interest and protection of the city, that we do that every year. I can imagine that we haven't gone to the bank and said, hey, you know, somebody 2 or 3 years ago is not authorized to sign anymore. The bank will get this document and know that it revokes all prior signature cards except for those that are good during this year, 2018. So that was the intent of this, is just to clean things up and protect the city. So, and Warren, being a banker, now understands that.
Makes sense.
And to make it look like I had a lot of power.
Just kidding.
Amen.
Thank you.
Okay.
If we're good on that one, then I move we approve resolution R33-2018 with the changes discussed during the discussion.
Okay.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R33-2018 with the changes suggested. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. And then we also have R34-2018 that was pulled from the consent agenda.
Did you have any issue with that one, Cardoza, or was it tied in with the prior?
It was just the R33.
Okay. I move we approve resolution R34-2018.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution number R34-2018. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Let's see. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-22, an ordinance of the City Council of CUNA, Idaho, amending Title 12, Chapter 2, Section 15 of the CUNA City Code, providing for establishing the Joint Development Impact Fee Advisory Committee, the committee name, the membership, the committee organization, and the committee reporting, and amending Title 12, Chapter 2, Subsection 17M to state that the Joint Advisory Committee created during the preparation of the Capital Improvement Plan becomes the Joint Advisory Committee created by this ordinance and providing for an effective date and publication. So this just has to do with the creation of the
police impact fee, right?
Yeah, the joint committee of fire impact fee people.
Yes. Mayor, Council, for the record, Richard Rhodes. So because the fire district is being administered by the city for the collection and some of those appointment duties, this just basically cleans that up, makes it clear that it's a joint impact fee commit or fee committee and some of those duties and responsibilities. So pretty self-explanatory in it, but I will stand for any questions.
Questions for Richard.
Will the police impact fee study be under this then, basically?
No.
It'll be a combined for the fire and the police?
No, that will be a separate entity. This, because the fire district is a separate district, has this procedure, the police will actually, because they're an entity of the city, much like the Parks Department, we contract with them, but we'll be more in that role, so it will be somewhat different. But it won't be under this umbrella. It will have its own mechanism.
Okay, anything further?
I move we waive three readings of Ordinance 2018-22.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three meetings of Ordinance Number 2018-22. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve Ordinance 2018-22.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve Ordinance 2018-22. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardozo?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes. I move we approve summary publication of Ordinance 2018-22.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve summary publication of Ordinance 2018-22. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Consideration to approve Ordinance Number 2018-23, an ordinance of the City of CUNA, Idaho, amending Title 7, Chapter 6, Section 3, Title Service Connection Charges, providing for certain clarifications regarding the sewer connection charges and the definition of EDU, the definition of the EDU use to conform with the calculation contained in the currently adopted City of CUNA Master Plan, a revision of the EDU evaluation process for non-residential uses, a definition to the EDU calculation for the multi-use properties, a mechanism to review EDU use after January 1, 2018, and allowing the city to request the review and setting forth 3 years as the time to review past accounts, a procedure to determine the EDU calculations for business changes, and amending Title 7, Chapter 6, Section 4, titled Monthly Service Charges, providing for clarification to the minimum monthly service charges definition, a review by the city treasurer or account holder of the account, and providing an effective date and publication.
Mayor, Council, for the record, Richard Brooks. So this is probably a long time coming. Gordon and I talked a little bit about some of these things, and I believe several of you were brought up to speed on some of the issues that we have currently with our commercial businesses and the EDU calculations, specifically the Hamburger Place in town is on three EDUs, and they're using a 47.7 EDUs, which is essentially a 50-home subdivision, is their usage. So that's what prompted me to look at this. There were some discussions that Gordon and I had about how we take care of those existing issues and how we correct those fairly. So essentially what this does is you'll note it's really in two sections. You got the service connection charges, and that's the what it costs you to hook up to the sewer. And so there's been some changes, just language changes in that to make that clearer. As you recall, we had a request on a multifamily. This makes it clear that it's one EDU per dwelling unit. And then the calculations for the non-residential is where the critical change comes in here. Based on the EDU use, the sewer master plan, which now has it at a little bit higher rate. And as you go down through that, the adoption of that schedule by the resolution, one of the questions that came up is trying to deal with a multi-tenant building that has a number of lessees in that building, and how do we deal with that on a sewer rate type of thing if they have 1 meter or more. So that last sentence there, if they use more than one EDU, which is just under 207 gallons per day, then they'll have to get their own meter. Trying to consider a business that's, say, a professional business, an accountant or a lawyer who rents an office in a building, it wouldn't be fair for them to, but if somebody puts in a sink and some other amenities in there and all of a sudden they're using that, is it fair to them not to pay that one EDU type of thing? So that's what that does. Then the new D paragraph, I tried to consider what and how we would deal with this situation of the request. So commencing after January of this year, at the request of the city or the account holder, a connection may be reevaluated at least after one full year of service, and the EDU calculation can be adjusted if appropriate. Currently, it just allows the account holder to make that request. The city doesn't have the capability to make that request. And there's times that there's just a wide variation of Hamburger Shop, for example, that 47.7 where they're at three. Again, I mean, that's almost the same as what a 50-home subdivision would be using. There's a number of incidences where they're just so far divergent between what they're paying under the EDU and what their actual use is. So that allows the city to basically audit those accounts and go in and correct those. That last part of it, that if more than 3 years have passed since the service was commenced, then the EDU calculation shall be determined to be correct and no evaluation shall be permitted. That was kind of, I guess, a statute of limitations on some of these, where how far back would we want to go if they haven't requested it and we haven't requested it. It kind of came down to, well, we just have to say it is what it is. Again, this is dealing with the service connection charges. So this is what somebody pays to connect to the system. And at some point in time, we would have to say, you know, that's set, and that's just what it's going to be. Distinguishing it from the monthly service charges. Finally, trying to deal with, in paragraph E, a continuing business operation that may have had one EDU at the time, either because they just hooked up to the system, I believe, probably when the system was installed and they were taken off septic, everybody just hooked up. There was no calculation. There was no chart. We did subsequently adopt a chart that I think is very similar to what we have now, but there's been no real bringing those up. So E basically says that they're not required to purchase additional ones if it's an existing business and they are not entitled to a refund if the EDU schedule is amended. If there's a change in the use, either commercial or industrial, then we can reevaluate and they'll receive credit for what they actually paid for. And if that's not there, they get the credit for the one that's typically going to be in the downtown core area. So that's paragraph E. In section two, the monthly service charges, this is where we probably have the biggest issue with the collection of fees right now on some of these ones that are so widely divergent between what they are assessed. Essentially what we did is we've done historically is whatever you paid for when you connected, that was then calculated when you paid your sewer rate, regardless of the amount of sewer you put into the system. So that example of the 47.7 use, that pays for three sewer, 600 gallons in the system, and they're putting thousands of gallons into the system every day. So this is an attempt to correct that by auditing those accounts and then bringing those amounts forward to actually what their use is. It may be, some people are probably going to complain a bit. Hopefully it promotes conservation for those that have had excessive use and they realize that that's something that they need to consider in that. I guess in looking at this as the big picture, this is, in our plant, the commodity we have is capacity, and we have to monitor that capacity. And if we're only selling 3 EDUs of capacity and we're allowing 47.7, somebody's getting shorted in that, and typically it's going to be the city, the wear and tear, and all those other costs. So B gives the city treasurer and the account holder the reevaluation of those monthly service charges. And I will stand for any questions.
So on item E there, does this allow us to, I guess my worry is for this downtown core where we have the old existing buildings, let's say, for instance, the old hardware store, somebody wants to put a restaurant in there and whatever number of tables they go in there, but in order to open that restaurant now they're going to have to buy 5 EDUs. There are other formulas that other cities use, as I think Bob had mentioned, fixture counts and things like that that give a little more accurate reading as to what the water usage would be. So rather than going out and charging them for 5 or 6 more EDUs at $30,000 or whatever that comes up to, we can do a fixture count that gives you the gallons per day or however they calculate that, so that it's not such a burden on somebody to open a business in an old existing building. New buildings, I mean, we use the calculation we use, and I don't think we get much grief from that because it's a new structure and they expect to tie into that. But I guess I just kind of worry about making a ghost town out of the downtown if we don't look at that a little bit more.
So our system for evaluation is set up on averages that a business uses, which is what they all pay, and then they have the ability to come in after a year of use and say that's too much, I'm actually using this, and then we can adjust it. To answer your question in E, I tried to consider how we deal with the downtown core versus some of the newer businesses and try to be fair. It's certainly good to talk about some options there. The concern is, again, what we the commodity that we're selling that we have to be responsible to Key Bank for is the capacity at the plant. So if we have a downtown business that wants to open up, how can we distinguish that need to preserve the core and the operation of the businesses down there versus, you know, the new pizza place that's opening up that has to buy five? It's a difficult question. We could certainly look at another chart to adopt, or we could look at the business and perhaps allowing them to make those payments over time. Maybe we set a minimum, and then after a year, at the time of reevaluation, then they can, you know, they pay for whatever, and then they pay the monthly uses. And then we can consider it if it's more or less in that system. The hard thing, again, is the capacity at the plant that I'm trying to be cognizant of when we use those estimates. And ours actually went up, I believe it was 190 gallons per EDU, and it's 206.7 now. So we're actually, probably because of the families and stuff, a larger using that. So that's, I don't know if you remember back when we were talking about the capacity at the plant and we built in that 10% buffer for capacity. We had to be very careful because if we went from 190 to 206.7, that could very well be that 10% buffer that we built into the capacity at that plant. So I'm trying to really be cognizant of all that in this, and how do we solve that situation? Would it be on a case-by-case basis where we can enter into some type of payment plan, or hold it out over a year with them paying a certain number of them, and then we do it again? Because, as you know, businesses can, if they're calculated, can have a number of EDUs that they have to do. So.
Well, there's tried and true methods of figuring this out. So it's not like we would be picking something randomly. So there would actually be some legitimacy to what we're talking about. I guess I just fear that we're going to make it impossible for someone to, I mean, the little hardware store downtown, that'd be a great place to have a little restaurant, but if we price them out of that so they can't do that, we're going to end up with a whole bunch of secondhand stores down there, and all of our downtown revitalization will have been for naught. Bob?
Mayor and Council, I would personally really like an opportunity to actually look into this a little deeper. I have talked to a lot of the other public works directors and public works departments, and everybody does do it a little bit differently. And I think we could actually bring a good plan to the table for you guys to look at and come up with something that will be viable for especially the old downtown and the older buildings that were built pre-2013. Basically, everything that was built 2013 current is under the chart that is existing and is not much of an issue. It's the older buildings that become an issue for this. And I would personally really like the opportunity to bring you guys a few ideas and see if we can come up with a plan that'll work for everybody on this.
Are you recommending that we table this item or that we slow track it for three readings? Like, do we feel like we would have it in time for, yeah?
I'd like to ask that it be tabled. There's a couple downtown businesses that expressed some interest in participating in this ordinance and the conversation about downtown and assessments and stuff. So definitely a slow track, but perhaps to table it till they could be in attendance.
My preference would be to table it. It's going to take some time to put the data together and some ideas. I'm not sure three readings would be enough.
Is there any urgency for any other part of this that we would want to enact sooner rather than later, or better to just hold off on everything?
Well, I would say Section 2 should have been done some time ago. It doesn't deal with the downtown businesses other than actually their actual use. And I think we have an obligation to the system and to everybody else that's a user of that system to fairly charge them for what they're using.
So the monthly service charge portion, is that what you're talking about, 764?
Yeah. That seems to me to be pretty non-controversial, other than people will start paying for what their use is.
Yeah.
Again, when you've got 47.7 and they're paying for three, that's...
Yeah.
So I'm fine. I mean, the other one is an attempt to try to solve an issue citywide.
Fairly. Yeah.
But the monthly service charges, I think that we need to move forward on that one.
Okay. Is everybody else okay with that if we go ahead and implement a portion and table the rest? Yeah. Hearing no objections, I will assume concurrence. So I'm not sure how the best way to do this at this point. Would it just, I mean, would I go ahead with a motion to waive three readings, and then when it comes time to, when I get to the motion to approve, just note that we are approving the changes to section, whatever it was, 764 only? Or do I need to include the changes to 764 only in each of the motions that I make?
I would do it in each of the motions.
Okay.
Before we proceed, I thought we were going to wait for Bob.
So what I'm proposing, or what I will be including in my motion, would be that we table 763, okay, which is just the service connection charges portion, because okay, that was the thing that we wanted to work on, and then go ahead and pass 764, the monthly service charges, because with that one, as Rhodes is noting, we're charging people for what they're actually using at this point, and so better to go ahead and do that now. No real reason to wait on that. That seems uncontroversial. Is that
agreeable, Bob?
I guess I'd just ask one question. Does this give us the ability to go talk to these people and work with them to fix their issues instead of just throwing a bill at them for the maximum amount? I mean, is that...
That certainly would be the intent, is to let them know, here's what's going on. The bill, you know, is passed, and you're going to be charged now for your actual use of, your contribution to the sewer. So, yeah, I mean, totally intend to do that.
Well, do you want to elaborate on your concern, or?
Well, my concern would be we have a business that's been established here since 1999 or 2000, and all of a sudden we're throwing, 47 EDUs at them, or 46 EDUs, a usage chart will be a pretty big shock overnight. I think it would be a better way to go handle it, let them know it's coming, and try to help them find alternatives to fix the problem so that they're not, using an excessive amount of water and creating an excessive amount of waste. So if this gives us the ability to do that, then, I guess I'm volunteering to be that guy.
I guess, to put it in a different way, I guess this kind of creates the carrot and the stick for that scenario. I mean, maybe people would change out of the goodness of their hearts, but if there's never going to be a penalty for excessive use, then I don't know why, there's no incentive to do it. So if I'm hopeful that, I think we've always been reasonable. We've tried to be, as a city, reasonable with setting up payment plans when necessary, and things of that nature. So I don't know how quickly we would actually roll out or start conducting these audits and stuff, but I'm on board with kind of giving people a heads up and maybe not, depending on what the charges look like, maybe not enforcing like the entire amount right off the bat. But the flip side of it is, though, if they have been using 47 EDUs worth of water and only been paying for three, like the amount of free service on the backs of CUNA taxpayers that they've been getting for however many years, like, I don't feel super bad making them actually pay for what they're using. You know what I mean? So, but I think there's a gentle way to do that, like you said.
Okay. Being a merchant downtown, Richard, I think I found a way to circumvent it. I'm going to have our employees flush three times a day.
Okay. Sorry, navigating. I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2018-23, noting that the only portion of 2018-23 we are currently changing would be section 764.
We have a second.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance 2018-23, noting
just
that
waiving. I'm just waiving the three
readings. Oh, waiving the three readings of ordinance number 28-23, noting that we're only approving or working on 76-4. Bull. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
I move we approve ordinance 2018-23 as applies to section 764 only.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 28-23 applying 7-64 only. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin, Boobin von der Haar?
Yes.
Sorry.
I move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-23, section 764.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the summary publication of ordinance number 2018-23, section 764. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Alright, consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-24, an ordinance of the City of Cuna, Idaho, annexing all of parcel S13031117000, owned by Challenger Development Incorporated and referred to as Memory Ranch Subdivision Number 2, into the Cuna Municipal Irrigation District from the Nampa Meridian Irrigation District, changing the respective boundaries of said districts, declaring water rights appurtenant thereto are pooled for delivery purposes, directing that copies of this ordinance be recorded as provided by law, and providing an effective date.
this is our normal routine, so I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2018-24.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2018-24. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2018-24.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2018-24. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin von der Haar?
Yes. Move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-24.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-24. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Mayor Council announcement. So this Thursday at noon, we have our joint ACHD meeting at the ACHD public meeting room. If you want to ride together, we ought to probably leave here about 11:20. Okay. In case we get stuck at one of these stoplights out here.
I will be here at 11:19.
11:19 for Richard, okay?
Meet you guys. I'm planning on carpooling as well, just so you know.
You're going to what?
I'm planning on carpooling as well.
Okay, good.
So, yes.
I'll meet you there.
Okay. And we don't know about Greg. All right. Did anybody else have anything else they wanted to do?
Just confirming that the special council session for Thursday evening has been canceled. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. If nothing further, meeting adjourned.